Hello, and welcome back to Everyday Heroes, a mini-series by Hero Devs, where we explore the experiences of women in tech whose everyday efforts build bridges for all this to follow. I'm your host, Wendy Hurst. The month of March in the United States is Women's History Month, and in this mini-series, we're chatting with some women in tech who share their journey of how they got here and where they want to go. Today, we're talking with Taylor Corbett. Taylor is a marketing coordinator at Hero Devs. She's been in tech for 3 years in journalism, politics, and tech. She joins us from Texas today. Welcome, Taylor.
Hi, Wendy.
Thanks for joining us. What's the weather like in Texas today?
So yesterday was beautiful. Right now, it is like 90% humidity, which is why my hair is doing this. And I already am sweating and I'm inside. Oh, man. Sick out there.
Right. So tell me about yourself, Taylor.
My name's Taylor. I am born and raised in Texas. So when you think small town Texas, that's where I'm from. My hometown had 199 people. So, you know, I didn't really know much about anything when I went into the world. And like my realm of understanding tech was just like my digital graphics class, which I had a lot of fun in. And then my uncle, he was always in computer science. So he always would talk to me about it. But I mean, for me, it was just kind of like, we didn't really talk about anything like that. I mean, it was a whole bunch of ranchers and farmers, and they just had, I mean, I didn't even have Wi-Fi until I was 18, like in 2013 or 12. I know how old I am.
It gets harder the older you get to remember years.
Yeah. So it was just, it was not something that was on top of everyone's mind. And if they were, they would think of me and they'd always have me come and fix it. But that doesn't mean I had any training. It was just, I played with stuff a lot.
That's fair. Yeah. So how did you get into tech?
So I started my career in journalism. I was like, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. And I really love digital media. And so it got me this fellowship with this TV company called Raycom Media. So I ended up getting to go to a whole bunch of different TV stations and see how they're approaching digital and like their websites and their apps. And that was what I was really interested in. I didn't really care about being on TV. I didn't really care about broadcast at all, honestly. I just wanted to be online, be in those communities, like serve those communities. So I ended up in Waco and I had an entire digital department. So we did OTT, which is kind of like your Roku apps and all that kind of stuff. And so I ended up doing a little bit of like developing and coding and programming, not a lot, but just very rudimentary because no one at the station really did digital except for me. So I would have to do digital for sales and digital for marketing and digital for the newsroom and digital for like just like the reception. So I kind of did all of that. And I got a lot of experience. And then I went to the attorney general's office. And during that time, I got a recruiter from Apple reach out to me and they wanted to see if my skills could translate for their internal team for their information and security division. And so that was my first taste of tech. And I loved it. I loved everyone there. Everyone was like really relaxed and happy. You could tell this was like a career that a lot of people enjoyed and were happy. And there's so many options. And so after Apple, I worked with a user-generated content company. And so I worked with marketing plans for a lot of like one-off, you know, small businesses. And that was really fun. But I kind of wanted to combine all of my skills into doing kind of what I did in news, but for like a tech company. And so when I saw this position, I was like, oh, this is great. And so I'm so excited because I just started a couple days ago. But I'm very excited to kind of take all of that together and use it here at Hero Devs.
That's great. So how do you feel like working in tech compares to the experience you had before?
So I would say it is a much better work-life balance before everything is do or die urgent. Like, you know, I remember I was literally at the gym and I got a call that George W. Bush had died and he's from our area. So I literally had to jump out of the gym, run down the road at the TV station and start doing content and start making calls and start, you know, orchestrating that kind of thing. And that was super fun in my early 20s. But as you get older, it's just really hard to manage. Like during this time of the year, specifically in Texas, is tornado season. So I wasn't allowed to have any kind of time off during this period because there's just too much stuff going on. When there's a tornado outside, you go to work. Like that's kind of how it works. And so I just kind of got to the point where that really didn't fit my like goals and dreams and whatnot. So that's kind of when I left. And it was also just an old school way of doing business. Like they were trying to keep up with the times and be more people friendly, but it's just an industry where that is not developing quick enough. So I was really excited to get into tech because I feel like diversity and inclusion is a huge deal here. Everyone gets an equal opportunity. People are not so quick to jump on down everyone's throat. It's just a more professional setting, believe it or not. And so I really enjoy being here more because I feel more supported and protected than any other field that I've been in. And I mean, I've loved other jobs, but I just feel like tech, really, most places I've been at, they really care about you as a person, and they know caring about you helps everybody. So I prefer it here.
That's a great answer. How do you feel like your experience in all of these different industries influences how you approach your work?
Every job I have, I learned something different. So even before journalism, I was a teacher, like way back in the day. I did after school teaching. And so my experience corralling a whole bunch of kindergartners was super helpful in my job of managing 6 digital content producers. And so it's kind of like, I love that I've been in a whole bunch of different industries because I see the gaps within each industry because people are too siloed. And being siloed is kind of like, it's such a weak point that if you can get past it, and the easiest way to get past it is being in a whole bunch of different industries or in different roles. So I think that gives me a lot of like that advantage of knowing how other people do business and how can we use that business here and develop it. Because a lot of times you'll go into this industry where they don't know anything about that. And so you have this edge over your competitors because you've had so much experience in different industries. That's kind of, I love that about my career, even though it's kind of all over the place.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you are really good at bringing in kind of your life experience into what you do, which is really cool. You said that you were a teacher. What did you teach?
So I worked for communities and schools, and that was an after-school program for underprivileged youth. So basically a lot of people, instead of going to daycare or like having a babysitter, we would work with their teachers and we would sit down and do homework with all of them. And a lot of them were English as a second language kids. So they had a little bit of a learning curve. And so they got to spend a lot of one-on-one time with us after school. And so their parents got free care, which at that point they really needed. And the kids got extra attention for school. So I love doing that. And for specifically our school, the reading levels are really down. So we did a lot of reading, but it kind of just depended on like what the teacher needed. But I love that job. Those kids were so great. Like it gave me, I used to bring my dog there and they would all play with it. It was just such a fun experience. But I learned a whole bunch about like patience and leadership. And I learned it all through these little chubby kindergartners.
That's really cool. You got to do that.
Yeah, I love that.
Teachers are a lot like mentors.
Yeah. And it was the prime time of Frozen. So a lot of my lessons were like Frozen related. So if they were acting crazy, I would play Let It Go and they had a certain dance and it would ended with them sitting in the chairs. And I used that kind of concept in my leadership roles from then on. I mean, they didn't dance to Frozen, obviously.
It's that kind of get people involved and just talking. Right, yeah. Social experiment in a way.
Exactly.
So when it comes to mentorship, was there a time in your life when you had a mentor that you found benefit from?
Yeah. So my first job in news, I was a digital content producer for the Raycom Hub. So I wrote content for 50 different TV stations. And that's all I ever did. And so my boss there, she was a woman, and in news, it's better now, but especially when I started, there was not a lot of female leadership. And so I am like, naivety has helped me a lot in my career, I would say, because at that point I was not really scared to walk up to my boss and be like, hey, one day I want to be a boss like you. How do I get there? And a lot of people have that fear, but because I was from a small town, I'm used to going up to anybody and asking a question if I had one. I didn't have that base level fear. So I went up to her and I'm just like, hey, this is what I want to do. How do I get there? And she's like, well, number one is never ask anyone to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself. And I took that to heart. And so there would be times like in my leadership where I would ask all my team to do something and they would complain and whine. And my favorite way to kind of like pivot from that was just to be like, okay. And I would do it for them. I wouldn't complain and I'd sit down. And it was kind of like a lesson in servant leadership. And so she taught me that, and she taught me a whole bunch of other stuff, but she really, the entire time of me being a manager, especially being a young female, I was able to like reach out to her and her literally just kind of lay it out. Like, this is how it is. These are the best moves. And I appreciate her and keep up with her to this day. We're snap friends.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's also really good advice. Never ask anyone to do anything that you wouldn't do yourself.
Yeah. So, and that doesn't mean you like, and it doesn't mean like, oh, I know how to do everything and that's why I ask. It's just like, if I had that skill, would I do that? And then that's when you feel comfortable asking. And I feel like it keeps my ego in check and it's kept me in check my whole life. It's a good benchmark, I think.
Okay. Thanks for sharing that. What's one piece of advice that you would give to a big group of people?
Oh man. So I feel like when I sit down with a lot of people, they get really wrapped up into the problem and not really the solution. And it's just like a human thing. We're human people. So when we hear bad news or something, like instead of a solve the problem, it's not our immediate reaction all the time. So a lot of times it's like this like doom circle. And so if I could just tell people to breathe and think it out, and usually there's very few things in this world that's not solvable. I mean, they do exist, but most of the time that's not what you're facing. So if you just breathe and calm yourself down and ask yourself, what is the worst case scenario? Can I handle it? And can I fix it? And if you can breathe and ask yourself those three questions, like you're usually set off to like something good.
That's really great advice. Was there a time in your life when you wished you had that advice, but you didn't?
Pretty much 1 through 25.
So almost your whole life.
Like this is a recently learned thing. There was a lot of trial and error. But yeah, like my whole life, anytime something happened, I mean, I was a squirrel, like I'd be like running around like, and I didn't really help anyone, including myself. If anything, it slowed me down. So the minute I was able to like, just like, and move forward, I started seeing a lot more positive results. And I was moving through obstacles a lot quicker than I was in my early 20s.
That's great advice. Don't get wrapped up in the problem. Focus on the solution.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, what's the worst case scenario? Can I handle it? What would I do about it?
Yeah. It's, I had a whole year course on strategic communication because we were opening a new TV station. And honestly, the things I learned there, I used on my own life, and things like that is what you learn. And so a lot of people come into your business life using strategy, like breaking everything down, but you can do it with your personal life. You can do it with anything. And once you learn these skills, they're invaluable because you can, I mean, they just can make you whatever you want to be, really.
Interesting. Interesting.
There's your lot. I don't
know what else to say. Like, that's really cool.
It's yeah. I think the minute I started to slow down my squirrel brain, everything kind of changed for me.
Is that, you said that's a recent thing for you?
Yeah. I would say leaving news, because everyone's so chaotic there, was like the first step to have. And so when I was in politics and everyone was freaking out, they would all come to me and be like, help us relax. And they called me the interpreter for a while. So that was my role.
Okay, having you interpret.
Yeah. So my favorite thing was my boss and my coworker, where they were characters. I love them to death, but they could not communicate. And so they would always have huge fights. And so they would come into my office and I would literally have to stop one of them from talking. And we had a stick, like a talking stick. And so my boss would tell me what he was saying. And then I would relay it to my coworker in the language that she would understand, and vice versa. And at the end, they'd be like, oh, so this isn't even a big deal. And it's like, it's not. It was a misunderstanding. Y'all love each other. Let's go write a press release.
Let's hold hands and write this thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, the amount of times I do that to this, like we actually had a group meetup, like after we all have new jobs, and they were like, specifically, they were like, Taylor, we need you to come do that for our new employees. And I was like, well, you had to pay me.
We talked about your experience in journalism. We talked about your experience in tech. I want to talk a little bit about your experience in politics. Tell me more about that.
So when I was getting out of journalism, it was 2020. And so to try to explain to people, like the skills that I have accrued in my 10 years in journalism at that point, I was like, it was hard. It was really, really hard to get someone to understand like, hey, I know you want to hire someone else that has marketing in their title, but I've done 800 jobs plus theirs. And I did it all in like one day. So that was really, really, really rough. And then it was 2020. So we all know it was crazy out there in the job force. So I finally was getting to the level of fed up because I wanted out of news. I didn't want the stress of it anymore. I had just got out of the hospital. I had this like crazy thing where I got sepsis and they thought I was going to like not make it. And so I was just like,
oh my goodness,
I am getting out. So I was very dedicated. And so I really wanted a public sector job because I just I had in my head, if I get this public sector job, like, it's going to open a whole door of opportunities for me. So I started applying to, like, all, like, Texas Park and Recreation, Texas Attorney General's office. And so in my cover letter, it was like, I know you're wondering what I can bring you as a journalist, but I promise you it's better than anything else anyone else in this pile has, like, something along those lines. And so my boss at the Attorney General called me, and he was like, I love SAS. Come on. And so I was over there, and that was such an experience. I mean, my first month there is when Texas had the big freeze. And so I had to do all the PR and stuff for that. And it was a mess. So what I would say there is there were so many times that the person that I was having to write for would get himself in every kind of issue and trouble. And I would try to have to, like, write it out. And whether or not you agree or disagree, it's just what you had to do. And so I learned a lot about crisis management. I learned a lot about influencing the people, because that's not really what journalism was. It was more of like, get the facts out quick, throw whatever. And this was a lot about influence. So I really learned how to play the game. And if anything, that made me super not want to be in politics, because I was like, oh, I didn't want to know all of this. So that's kind of how I felt about it. But I had a really good team. And I'm so grateful that they gave me that opportunity to, like, pivot into PR and communications.
Interesting. So how do you typically approach balancing the facts that you talked about, like you would in journalism, with influence that you learned in politics?
So I haven't had to combine them both yet. But with journalism, I was very intense about do no harm. So there were plenty of times where we had to make really hard decisions, like whether or not we were going to, like, we had enough evidence to run something. And it was also not just like, oh, we want to do the right thing. It's like, you can get sued too. So there was this one instance where we had caught a principal who was sexually assaulting, harassing students and coworkers. And every time he got caught, the school didn't want all of the bad PR. So they would just quietly make him go away. So it never got on his record. So he went to 6 to 7 different schools, more than that, but 6 to 7 that we confirmed. And so we had a plethora of information that probably was true that I would not let us release, because it just wasn't fact checked. And even if this guy is a bad guy or whatever, we don't want to, like, add falsities to it. And then what if he disproved one of our falsities, which meant all of our truth is down the window? So you have to really think about those things, like, where you really want justice. Sometimes it just, you can't release it all. And it's very frustrating, because, and especially in that case, this was a guy that he had hurt a lot of people. And so a lot of people didn't get to tell their stories, but it was just one of those things where you had to protect the integrity of the case, because we really wanted to stop him. Like, as much as we love everyone to get justice, the number one thing was making sure everyone knew this guy was a predator. So that was probably one of the hardest things I had to do and decide. And then when I went over to journalism or went into politics, they kind of just kept me out in the dark for a whole bunch of stuff. So that way I wouldn't have to know a lot. And that's kind of just how PR works in a lot of worlds. They just don't tell you everything. So that way you can continue to, like, pump it up. So that whole situation was just kind of like, it depended on the day. I mean, there are crazy things happening all the time in the Texas Attorney General's office. We were doing really good things, like stopping child predators. And then we were doing things like suing Ben and Jerry's. So it just kind of, like, depended on things. But yeah, so that was, it was a hard balance. It was a different world. But you kind of get the parameters from your job, right? Like, where do you fit? And you just kind of decide, like, morally inside, what can you align to? And then you work from there.
Interesting. I didn't know that about PR, that they don't necessarily tell you everything. Is that for, like, a plausible deniability situation?
Part of it, I believe, because there were times that I was subpoenaed. So probably. So, you know, when I was such in a prestigious situation that when I quit, I had a whole bunch of reporters reach out and I had nothing to tell them. Like, I was like, I don't know anything. Like, everything I say is speculation. Like, it's not worth, you know, looking into. But that is because they do. They want to, when you leave, they want to pry you open and get all your details for good reason. Like, that's, they're doing their job. And I'm like, I don't know anything. So I'm unhelpful.
That's fair. So, yeah. How do you feel about that?
I left.
Is that ultimately the reason that you left?
I think so. It was just kind of like, it got to the point where I just didn't align. And then a lot of the people that I loved working with had left. And so, and then I got, I mean, it kind of like, it was kismet. Like then all of a sudden Apple reached out to me and I was like, oh, this is a sign. And I took it. Cause I mean, I did get a lot of really good experience. I met a lot of great people. We did a lot of good stuff in that office too. It just, there's parts of it that just, you know, didn't really fit with who I am.
That's understandable. Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about what you did at Apple.
When I was at Apple, that was a whole, another whole new world because I was internal communications. So I wasn't dealing with press. I wasn't dealing with the public. It was a lot more relaxed. But then it's like, I felt like a drop of rain in the ocean because there was so much happening and so many things. But it was really fun because I've never worked in a slow paced environment like that. And at first, and even at the end, it was very frustrating. But the things that I learned, like we would spend a whole month writing 10 words, like it really would be that detailed. And at first I was just like, I'm going to pull my hair out. Let's just make a choice. Like, oh my goodness. But not that I would ever want to do that again, but I learned really about how to be concise, be precise, make sure everything you're saying is making an impact, like to that granular degree. And I'd never really operated that way because I was a speed demon. So that was just not something that I had really slowed down to be. Like I would always kind of naturally just have like a good knack of it, but I didn't sit there and just digest it for days and be like, is every part of this worthy? And so now I have that experience and I kind of take it with everything that I do. I'm a lot more particular. I'm a lot more direct. And it's kind of like I had a slew of information coming from my mouth constantly. And now I can like throw out daggers because of this experience.
Interesting. No, that's really good advice. Be crisp, be concise. Be precise and make sure everything you're saying makes an impact.
Yeah. So it was a very different way to do work, but I learned a lot.
Interesting. Is there a specific project you worked on at Apple that you just really loved?
So the thing that was most important was we would do a once a month internal InfoSec newsletter that would go out to the whole company, including Tim Cook. And so everyone was like, oh, Tim will see this. And so the amount of pressure we were under to like, you know, make it perfect was actually kind of fun because it was a good team. So we were just so, so particular about what we put in because we knew like Tim Cook, he doesn't have extra time. So if he's going to read our newsletter, we need to make sure everything in there gives him value. And again, that really helped with my whole entire marketing experience. But it was also really fun to just try to like make Tim Cook happy for the month.
Right. Was he ever unhappy with something that you guys put out?
Not that I know of. We never got like direct feedback at all, but it was just kind of like, we knew it was happening.
What's the ultimate reason that you decided to leave Apple?
So that was the layoff situation. And so, you know, it kind of happened. But I'm big on everything happened for a reason. And I was struggling with how slow it was. I don't think I was ready for, I'm not ready for that level of slowness. Like that's like retirement slow. And I'm still, I mean, I just turned 30. So I still have a lot of energy and I'm a little golden retriever energy up in here. So I was definitely trying to chew my leg off a couple of times. Because it's slow. It's slow. It's meaningful. It's precise. And one day that'll be me. But right now I'm still jumping off walls. So.
Okay. Well, I hope that your Jeffs gives you the walls that you need to jump off of, I guess. Oh,
every time I talk to Hayden this week, I'm just like, if you could visualize what's happening, there's like a million rays coming out of my brain right now.
For those who don't know, Hayden is our marketing manager. I don't know his actual title because we're pretty fluid with titles around here and that's okay.
I like marketing wizard. We can do that.
Marketing wizard. That's a really good way to put it. He's just kind of... kind of the brains of a lot of our marketing strategies, which is awesome and fun. So I'm glad that it sounds like you're enjoying the ride.
Oh, I definitely am. I definitely am. It's fun.
Good. Well, thank you for joining our podcast today. Thanks for being vulnerable and for sharing your experience. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Good. Okay.
Right. Awesome. Bye. Bye.